Been there, done that. It's time for a change.
Hi, I'm Rob Spears.
And I'm Brenda Michaels, and we're the hosts of Conscious Talk, radio that makes a difference.
If you're ready to engage life, expand consciousness, and ride the wave rather than be bowled over by the incredible changes that are upon us, then join us Monday through Friday at 7 a.m. on KKNW 1150 a.m. or 98.9 HD3 or ConsciousTalk.net, where together we'll forge the new human being.
If you love dogs, tune in to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes live every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. We'll talk about everything dog and interview authors, experts, and amazing organizations both locally and nationally. And don't even get me started on the pet food industry. I'm Julie Forbes. Find us online at www.dogradioshow.com and also as a free podcast on iTunes. The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, an evolved perspective on life with dogs.
Call karma specialist and metaphysical mother Robin Alexis for your free on-air readings Wednesdays at 12 noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Psychic medium Robin Alexis helps countless people to live fuller and more conscious lives on Mystic Radio with Robin Alexis. Call Wednesdays for your free on-air readings and hear rebroadcasts of Mystic Radio with Robin Alexis Thursdays at 8 p.m. And check out Robin's Soul Spa at robinalexis.com.
When the red, red robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along, along, there'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get out of bed, cheer up. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red robin starts bob, bob, bobbing along.
The following hour of Martha Norwalk's Animal World is brought to you by Jones & Company Pets. Their goal is happy, satisfied customers enjoying happy, healthy pets.
Hey, good morning, y'all. I'm Martha Norwalk, and welcome you to the second hour of this week's edition of Animal World. We're here every Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. You can tune us in on the radio dial. You can tune us in on the internet via streaming audio. That means you can share us with your family and friends around the country, around the world. And today's a great day to share. The best way to pick up the stream, go to the Animal World website, www.marthanorwalk.com. Click on the Listen Live icon in the upper right-hand corner of the homepage. That will click you through to the 1150 KKNW website. Click on Listen Live again. That will bring up the instructions that, or that will bring up the links that you need. And you click on Listen and Watch it on the KKNW website, and that brings up the links that you need to stream the show. And delighted to say that our all-time most popular guests are in the studio again, adventure travelers Helen and Bill Thayer. You just have to trust that Bill is here. He's here. We can all see him, but, you know, he's the silent, strong type. Mm-hmm. And Helen does the talking for the two of them. And, gosh, we left you at the North Pole. And Helen almost in the drink. And before I complete, or touch on the rest of Helen and Bill's resume, so y'all have a background of who they are, just have to say that, gosh, what a phenomenal dog, you know, Charlie was. Mm-hmm. And it was such a pleasure to actually know him. And the point I was making earlier that these dogs' genetics are so powerful is because of the life that they live, you know, being chained on the ice and polar bear hunters, and they get thrown mm-hmm. a hunk of tuna or something here or there.
Seal meat.
Frozen seal meat to eat. That when Helen purchased Charlie, and after the trek, she brought him home with her, and
That's
he
right.
became, you know, part of Helen and Bill's family. Well, and then, of course, it wasn't long after that, they're on Animal World with me, and they learned about Missing Link, mm-hmm. and you put Charlie on Missing Link
and
right away.
Acupuncture for dogs.
And then there was Dr.
Panzer.
Panzer. Dr. Richard Panzer was one of our Animal World vets at that time, and he does Chinese medicine and acupuncture. And then there was Mike Salusky with chiropractic. Mm-hmm. And so then Charlie got acupuncture and chiropractics for the rest of his life.
Yes.
And how many years did you say he lived?
23.
So that shows you the genetics.
Well,
for 100-pound
dogs. And we cooked
dogs.
All of his food.
Yeah, you home-cooked?
The missing link, and then he had chiropractic and animal and acupuncture, and I learned animal massage as well. And we treated him as an athlete.
Yeah, and 23 years. Mm-hmm. And then he went on a lot of the dark. So, now, listen up here, because this is impressive. So, we know now that in 1988, at 50 years old, Helen was the first woman, and I believe the only woman ever to walk to the North Pole.
Magnetic
North Pole without resupplies or any of that kind of stuff. In 1990, she was the American leader of the first Russian-USA women's Arctic expedition to Siberia and the Soviet polar islands. In 1992, Helen and Bill were the first married couple to walk to any of the world's poles. They traveled on foot, pulling their own sleds without any resupply to the magnetic North Pole. Crap, she did it again. Do you believe that? Bill was the oldest person at 65 to walk to the pole, pulling his own sled without resupply. And, you know, when you think of this, aren't you, like, thinking, like, big, strong people? They're tiny.
I was just
they're tiny.
Thinking,
yeah, weren't you thinking that, Ashi?
Yeah.
How tall are you, Helen?
5'3". Mm. If I stand up straight, I'm 5'3".
Oh. And okay, so in 1994, Helen and Bill spent 1 year with Charlie, their canine companion of magnetic North Pole fame, in the Canadian Yukon and in the Northwest Territories, studying and photographing and living with three families of wild wolves at their den site, hunting range, and on the sea ice. The remarkable story is documented in Helen's second book, which is Three Among the Wolves. Mm-hmm. That's the book that's getting and the story that's getting all the attention now. So that's when we get through all the setup here. That's where we're going to focus our energy today. Let's see. 1995, they walked 1,500 miles through Death Valley, the Mojave and the American and Mexican Sonora deserts, in a study of high and low altitude deserts. 1996, the first woman to walk across the Sahara Desert following an ancient camel trade route of 4,000 miles. I know this, but it's still amazing to me. 1997, remember we started in 88 and she's 50 and Bill 60, and then 65 when they did the North Pole together. Let's see, 1997, Helen walked alone for 450 miles in Antarctica, pulling her own 260-pound sled, unresupplied. During the expedition, she celebrated her 60th birthday alone on the polar ice cap with a frozen cupcake and one candle. Her 60th birthday. She's at the South Pole now. She had no radio or voice contact with the outside world. She was the only living being in the area she traveled. She said, quote, it was like living on the moon. Now, 1998, with her husband Bill, Helen trekked the largest caribou herd in the world of 500,000 animals as they followed their centuries-old tradition of migrating their wintering grounds in southern Alaska to the North Slope calving grounds. The Thayers walked 600 miles, documenting the entire migration for educational and scientific programs. They walked with the herd across the vast tundra plains, across the windswept Brooks Range, the most northern mountain range in the world, to the frigid North Slope of Alaska. In 1999, walked 1,200 miles throughout New Zealand studying the Maori culture. In 2000, first non-Indians to kayak 1,200 miles along two rivers in a remote area of the Amazon rainforest. They lived with indigenous Indians and explored the area seldom seen by outsiders. It was a study of a rainforest's original inhabitants. Now, isn't that the trek, Helen, that you got shot at by a native, and then you were in your kayak on the Amazon, and there was a swarm of killer bees flying, mm-hmm. and you guys had to decide between the killer bees and piranhas, and you jumped in the Amazon.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, and they're still here.
We had to get rid of those bees. We had to worry about the piranhas later on.
Oh,
to deal with the problem of the moment.
Mm. Okay, now, also in 2000, they trekked 400 miles from the northern Canadian Yukon territories to the Arctic National Wildlife Reserve in Alaska to document the annual migration of 240,000 caribou of the porcupine herd from their wintering grounds to their summer calving grounds, and to document the Gwich'in indigenous people's dependence on the herd for sustenance. And then in 2001, first to trek on foot across the entire length of the Mongolian Gobi Desert, west to east, Helen 63 and Bill 74, a two-person team. They trekked a distance of 1,600 miles. They suffered through 126-degree heat, sandstorms, life-threatening thirst, and scorpions as they walked the longest route across the desert west to east on a journey of true discovery to share the nomadic lifestyle of desert nomads who have lived in the Gobi for hundreds of years and still follow the ancient lifestyle of their ancestors. Now, and that's the trek. This is the one that is the third book.
That's right, yeah,
Walking the Gobi.
That's right.
And that's where... Now that's Tom and Jerry. Was that the camels on that
camels,
track?
Yes.
Those were the camels.
We
that
had
went
two
with
camels
you.
Carrying all of our water and gear, and they had no names, so we called them Tom and Jerry.
And you made sure they were taken care of for the rest of their lives because you couldn't bring the camels home to Snohomish.
No, but we made sure that they were retired permanently, had all the veterinary care they might ever need, and.
And I'm thinking that the big things, a couple of the huge things that I remember on that trek, is it wasn't Tom or Jerry, didn't one of them lay down and roll on your water and destroy your water supply?
Yes, he was carrying the water that day, and he rolled and split the water containers. And so then we had to spend the next week struggling to find water and not die of thirst, and we almost did.
Yeah, they just barely made it in time to find
water.
We're
on day seven, and... We really, although we wouldn't admit it to each other because you can't be negative, but we really knew there'd be no day eight for us if we. Then we found a filthy little puddle. It was probably 12 feet by 20 feet, just a few inches deep. Filthy water, but it was water.
Now, then also on that track. That these camels kind of got you in trouble, that Tom and Jerry, because the water was gone. You got through that. But then didn't one of them get loose at night from his hobble or something and cross the Chinese border?
That's right. That was the second time we were told before when we received our permits to make this trek because nobody else had ever done it. It was hard to get permits from the government. Finally,
it was a real struggle. They didn't want to give you permission because you would die. They said.
They said that those foreigners have tried it before and they've been found dead in the desert. But we finally convinced them that we had a lot of desert experience. We knew what to do with camels and so forth. But the second time, the first time we by accident crossed into the Chinese side, but we were told before we began we'd be shot if we crossed the border. Well. By accident, we went over once, but then the second time the camels went over. Well, you can't leave your beloved. These camels were family,
uh-huh.
And we couldn't leave him because he would die out. There was nothing for him, and couldn't leave him. So we had to cross again, and that was definitely heart in the mouth. It was. We grabbed mm-hmm. him and we raced back.
Well, but did they caught you, didn't they?
They did the first time.
The first time you went over, they caught him crossing the border, and they were going to shoot you.
Yes, we were interrogated for several hours, and
Helen pulled the elder card. tell him what you did.
Well, the good captain who spoke excellent English, he was interrogating us for several hours, and finally he was asking the same questions of Bill and I, over and over and over again, until I finally got so sick and tired of this nonsense that I stood up to my entire 5'3", and he was probably just a bit under 6 feet, very tall for a Mongolian. And I told him that if your countrymen could listen to you now, they would be ashamed of you because in your country you treat elders with great respect. And we figured he was probably in his 30s. And I told him, we are your elders by many years, and you're not showing us any respect, and you know that we're innocent. We're not drug smugglers, because that's what they were accusing us of. Uh-huh. Of course we weren't. And so I told him, you know we're not. You've found nothing in our equipment. You've searched everything. You've searched us. You know we have nothing like that. And you know that we're not here for that. And so you need to really remember your heritage of respecting your elders. So right away he changed his whole attitude. Now he became our best friends. Because he didn't want us reporting him anywhere that he hadn't respected his elders. So then finally we did get away from there. But it was close call. We were actually forced across the border by a series of canyons that we found ourselves in. And we were kept, and of course the maps, every map has a different place for the border. And so, and we did cross, but we got back, and safe and sound on we went.
Yeah, so okay, so here are some of the highlights, awards and recognition for Helen, just so you know. 2006 recipient of the Explorers Club Vancouver Award for the Pursuit of Knowledge and Exploration. 2005 member of Washington State's Parade of Star Athletes. We'll find out about that in a minute. 2002, Helen was named one of the great explorers of the 20th century by National Geographic. The President and First Lady invited Helen to the White House in 1999. For a reception honoring pioneer women in sports. Helen was honored for many athletic achievements, expeditions, exploration, and education. And in August of 1999, the National Geographic Alaska Alliance awarded Helen the Robert A. Henning Geography Award. So, I mean, and that just kind of touches the surface, because it doesn't go on to everything they've done since then. And before we get to all the treks to Africa recently, because that's when your most recent interest has been over in Africa, since we're kind of starting over, let's go back to the very beginning. And Helen, you grew up in New Zealand, is that right?
That's right. I grew up in New Zealand on a farm. Of course, a lot of New Zealanders are farmers. We had 10,000 acres, sheep and cattle and dairy. And I was Dad's right-hand helper, you might say, and I was always happy in the outdoors. But then my parents liked to climb mountains as a hobby, and one of the family friends was Sir Edmund Hillary, the first person to summit Everest. Mm-hmm. So finally, at 9 years old, they said I could start climbing. So it was the 8,500-foot Mount Egmont, or Mount Taranaki it's called now, and that was the start when I realized that, you know, I had a goal to become a mountain climber. Then I learned all about planning. I soon learned that a goal without a plan is only a dream. Mm. And you've got to plan well. And so on, I went through my climbing career, climbing higher and higher mountains. And then I represented three countries in international track and field on each country's national team: New Zealand, country of my birth, Guatemala, where Bill was a helicopter pilot, and then the United States after I became a citizen here. Then I became United States National Luge Champion.
Luge Champion, yeah, for the United States on our Olympic team.
Yeah, Bill and I both ended up on the United States team in 73-74. And then I won the United States National Championship in 75. Then decided
that luge is no easy deal.
Well, it's very dangerous. And Bill got out a little earlier than I did. He had a successful time on the national team in Europe. But he said, hey, I need 2 feet, 2 hands to fly this helicopter. And I went on to win the national championship, but then I got out of the sport because I needed a body to continue my mountain climbing and so forth.
Well, and speaking of mountain climbing, how many times have you climbed Mount Rainier?
I've been on the summit 21 times.
And you've climbed mountains all over the world.
Mm, yes.
Now, you haven't done Everest. But there's a real good reason for that. There's a reason why you won't do that.
No, I won't. I'll never climb Everest. to start with, Ed Hillary, Sir Edmund Hillary, was one of my childhood mentors, and he was appalled at the tourists who are now climbing the mountain and the garbage that was being left on the mountain. And I agreed with him. And just out of pure respect of the mountain, I didn't want to... For instance, it used to be that an ethic of mountain climbing is that you clean your route as you come back down. Mm-hmm. They're leaving tents, oxygen bottles, and all sorts of stuff all over the mountain.
Not to mention dead bodies.
And it's just, I just won't have any part of that. And now, of course, there are so many tourists climbing the mountains. If you pay enough money, around $65,000, you can get to the top. And you'll find a guiding company that will take you. Now, it was shown on TV this season, was that the line of people, they're just basically head to tail all the way up. And they put in thousands of feet of fixed rope. Mm. All you do is hook in with your climbing device called a Juma, and there are other names as well. Hook in and you just slide along the rope. Then they put aluminum ladders in, permanent ladders, in the difficult parts. There's a place called Hillary Step where they put a permanent aluminum ladder. You wait your turn, and there's a huge jam up of people. And there's hundreds of people on the mountain at one time in one long line.
Mm.
And then to get on the summit, there's so much garbage on that summit. It's just absolutely amazing. We know one woman who climbed the mountain, she left one of these pink plastic flamingos on top. Mm. And so it's just junked out. And I just...
don't want to be a part of it. You don't want to support it. Totally understand.
It just doesn't... it's not a goal that I care to set for myself. To climb the highest mountain in the world is not important to me. It's more important to do things that are more environmentally sensitive, things with the wild animals and also the indigenous tribes of the world. Those are the sort of goals that we have now, to produce educational programs for Adventure Classroom. And Mount Everest is a wonderful mountain, but not the way it's being done now.
Yeah. All right. So you were 9 years old when you first started climbing mountains.
Yes.
All right. So we're in New Zealand, and you're a little farm girl.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how did you meet Bill?
Well, later on, Bill had been in the country 3 weeks. My father needed a helicopter to come over and spray some stuff called gorse that spreads very fast.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted this cleared from the pastures. So he called the company that sent Bill in the helicopter part. He was a helicopter pilot. They sent him in a helicopter. And my father had a foot operation, so he couldn't really go out in the field and show the pilot where to go, so he sent the farmer's daughter out.
Uh-huh. And guess who stole the farmer's daughter, folks?
Yeah. And so then, of course, about a three-day job turned into something like over a week.
Uh-huh.
And he'd come at daylight, land in the front pasture, and I'd be up before daylight. And then my mother started packing big... picnic baskets and so forth to take out the field. And so then a year and a half later, we were married in New Zealand, and Bill was transferred by request to Guatemala and Honduras to fly a helicopter there.
So it was really kind of like love at first sight.
Oh, definitely.
Huh?
Yeah. We became best friends right on the spot.
Yeah.
We were just meant for each other.
So how long have you guys been together?
We've been married now 51 years, last July 1st.
Wow.
So we figured we've got it right by this time.
And what a great team you make.
Wow.
I mean, and especially reading these books and hearing the stories of their treks. And it's like, like in The Three Among the Wolves, when you were up living with the wolves, mm-hmm. and a lot, some times that you got in trouble, out on the ice, mm-hmm. and so forth. I mean, you guys know each other inside and out,
yeah.
and you know what each other's thinking, and that's why you survive these things.
Well, we don't need conversation to survive together, and we become such a close team that if I couldn't go with Bill on an expedition, I would go by myself. I wouldn't go with anybody else because I'm so used to a strong person who is so mentally strong. Something goes wrong, there's no panic. We just automatically get things done. The tent has to go up in this awful storm or we're not going to live. The tent goes up without a word. We each know what we need to do. We do it. And there's no theatrics, no drama. There's hardly any conversation. You just do it with the understanding that you both are going to survive together.
And you're still trucking places.
Oh, yes. We're still a work in progress. I'm 74 now. Bill's 85. We're both going on. Oh, I would say we're going on 25 and 30, hopefully with a bit more sense.
Well, and you guys, they live out in Snohomish area, and so they're local here. But you guys go out on treks because you have to practice to keep your physical strength up. So
yes,
what do you guys do for fun?
Well, for fun, we go into the Cascades and hike long distances with packs, and we have our own gym at home. We have hills on our own property that we work out on.
So yeah, you live on the side of a mountain, sort
yes,
of like.
That's right. And we live in the foothills of the Cascades, and So we're constantly, we stay fit all the time, and we're always planning another expedition ahead. There's always two or three ahead. And, of course, we're really involved in creating educational programs for Adventure Classroom.
And that is your—that's really your heart project, mm-hmm. right? And tell us about. Before you do that, out in Snohomish, you live with a bunch of animals.
Mm-hmm.
So what's in your crew these days?
Well, let me see. We have 12 acres, so we have plenty of room. We have 6 dogs, 3 cats, all rescued, 1 rescued donkey, and 11 goats.
And you take care of them, and you come from some pretty strong genetics.
Mm.
Yes. So, 'cause how's your mom?
My mother's now 93, almost 94, racing through life, doing well.
She's still doing well. And so when you guys go off on these tracks,
she takes care of things.
The 93-year-old mom takes care of the farm and the animals. I mean, how cool is that?
Yeah, she's almost 94 now, so she's very strong and very positive and a wonderful attitude toward life. So, but we both come from genetically strong families. So we hope that if we keep taking our vitamins and do our exercises, we'll live a long. We want to live a life of creating educational programs for kids K-12. Bring all the information that we learn and photograph and write about. Bring it back to kids. Motivate them to set goals, plan for success, be persistent. Don't give up on yourself. Plus, teach them what's out there. That these indigenous cultures that we're studying all over the world, that we teach them that we are only one culture within a huge worldwide web of cultures. And we have to be respectful of all other cultures to gain respect for ourselves and to survive. If we're not prepared to go out there knowing that we're only one culture and that we have to support other cultures, then nobody will survive.
So Adventure Classroom, that's something that you run. People
yes.
can find out about that on your website,
that's right,
right, Helen?
Click onto Adventure Classroom. There's material and videos to download off the website. Also, we go into schools. I've spoken to over a million kids now since 1988 in schools. We like the up-close personal approach to kids so that they can see us in person, we can see them in person, and then when we talk about setting goals and improve lifestyle and being encouraged and have hope for the future. It's nothing like being there on the spot and talking to them eye to eye.
And then you've got several different programs that you do.
Yes.
Are they still the same? Reach for the Sky, Make Your Dreams Come True?
That's the one that I tell the story of my walk to the magnetic North Pole, and then Three Among the Wolves, of course, the story of our year among the wolves. Walking the Gobi is the story of our walk across the Gobi. I'm also producing a program, Walking Africa, and then also kayaking the Amazon.
Cool. And so people can go to your website and access the Adventure Classroom, mm-hmm. and then they can actually make arrangements for you to come to speak.
That's right.
To kids.
Mm-hmm. And also
schools,
I lecture for corporate America, nonprofits, clubs, and in fact, corporate America, the fees are, that's how we support Adventure Classroom, through paid speaking engagements as well. That allows us to go to the schools.
So that's fabulous. So if you want them to come and speak to your private dinner party, you'll mm-hmm. you'll come and
yep.
do that.
We've done a lot.
Or any kind of groups, but it really is phenomenal. I mean, we've had so much fun when you've done your programs here mm-hmm. with Slides on the Wall, and now that Mike knows, we'll have to talk about what we can arrange for next time.
Yes, we're both professional photographers, and I'm a writer, and so it works out well to be able to go out, live among these indigenous cultures, learn their lifestyle. We go there, we tell them, we leave our Western ways behind, tell them we have nothing to teach you, but you have everything to teach us. Then we bring the information back and pass it on.
All right. So, we covered everything you'd done up and through 2001 and all of that. And then we talked about you growing up in New Zealand as a farm girl. And then Bill got hired with the helicopter and stole the farmer's daughter. And then y'all went off and you did all the Olympic stuff mm-hmm. and the luge thing. You did those things together.
Yes,
that
yeah.
was part of your life together.
Yeah.
And then you started all this trekking business. Well, after the officialness, and we haven't had another. You got another book coming out? Are you doing a book on Africa?
Well, right now I'm writing. I've really got to get to my writing. a bit more consistently. I'm writing Charlie's biography right now.
Oh.
And then I want to write a book called Walking Africa. Then I want to go on to the Amazon experiences. So that's my goal now is to set aside more time for writing.
Okay, well, let's talk about how many years has it been you've been going back to Africa and doing stuff over there?
Oh, we've probably been, working on Africa since 1996, I guess, when we first walked across the Sahara Desert. And then we're delving down into southern, actually last year we walked another 900 miles across a portion of the Sahara from Morocco through Algeria, Mauritania, and Mali with the Berber tribe.
Yeah.
And we took our four camels. And they had 12, and we walked with them. They were looking for another water supply because the water tables were
dropping. I think that's the last time we spent a lot of time here on the show together was after you returned from that.
We just so enjoyed that trip. We walked through areas of the Sahara that are so sterile seemingly so sterile and dry that you think nothing will ever grow or live here. But even there, there's a tiny little insect, there's a tiny little leaf of something. You have to look hard for it in some places, but it's an extraordinary place. And those people, of course, they're really the survivors and great people. And we live with them, travel with them. We walk everywhere. We never ride a camel. We figure if we can't walk, we don't go. So we're definitely not mechanized. Definitely not. We will not leave tire tracks across these places. We will not do that. So we led our four camels and the Berber tribe, they led their 12 and off we went we were just part of but now we're going on. We want to go to northeast Ethiopia to the Darnakal Desert to live with the Afar people.
Oh.
They live the most extraordinary lifestyle in one of the worst environments you can imagine. And it's right at the northern part of the African Rift where the earth is pulled apart to such an extent that the earth is very thin. So, of course, it's very volcanic. A lot of sulfur in the water, ground. It has, it's very sterile, basically quite a sterile area. But huge surface salt mines. And these people mine the salt. And so we want to go there and see how they do the salt mining and walk again. It'll be a few hundred miles. Learn their lifestyle, just find out how do you survive this? How do you live with this and bring all that back into Adventure Classroom?
All right.
We're interested in going to Australia and traveling with the Aborigine people in the Simpson Desert.
Oh.
Simpson's
Rift. Have you done a trek in Australia before?
No, wanted to for a long time. And at least they're not fighting. It's many of these places we have to be careful that they're not fighting. We get caught up in somebody's civil war.
Oh.
So we really have to keep abreast of just what's happening in those regions we want to go to. Many times we plan to go, and then we have to stop, go somewhere else, or wait until they get over whatever it is they're fighting over. Since I was a child, I've wanted to go to the Congo and live with the pygmy people.
Mm.
But the Congo, it's just impossible right now, absolutely impossible. So the plan is put. It's not discarded, but it's put on the back burner, sitting there on that back shelf waiting.
And because you talked about Australia, that can't be too unfamiliar for you, having grown up in New Zealand.
It's a very different environment. New Zealand is very fertile, very green, perfect for farming. But it's really the east coast of Australia that's quite fertile. Very quickly you go inland, and it's just giant. Some of the worst deserts in the world. The Simpson Desert is one of the driest, harshest deserts in the world. Mm. Australia has the worst poisonous snake, the worst sea creature, the worst. They have the worst of just about everything. You have to be very careful there.
Now, I remember at one point we were talking about you guys were going to do a trek across China.
Yes.
Again, what's happened with that?
Well, we were going to do that, and then the Olympics came along. The Chinese became quite nervous with their permits. So we thought, well, rather than start out and be stopped somewhere, we better wait. But that's still a go. We want to go to the Kraklamakan Desert in the north. Then we'd like to go into southern China and go into the panda territory. People call them panda bears, but they're really not a bear. It's just panda. And so we want to study them. Why are they running out of their natural habitat, and what's happening to their bamboo? And of course, it's farming and people pushing them aside, just as we push animals aside here. But we want to study them. And so there's a lot in China. We have about four major expeditions we'd like to go through China.
Yeah, well, I'm amazed. And when most people are long retired, you guys are still planning big tracks.
Our retirement consists of walking long distances and planning more. And retirement is really not a word we ever consider. No, the eucalyptus are for the koalas.
Yeah, koalas do the eucalyptus. Right. Yeah. That's right.
And so, we don't own a rocking chair, and we don't. I don't know. We just sometimes people will say, "Aren't you too old for this?" And my answer is, "Well, what is your definition of old? Is it too old for you? It's not too old for us."
And well, so, all you got to remember is that, you know, the first big trek to the magnetic North Pole, you were 50.
Yeah.
By yourself.
Oh. So age is not a factor. We're still a work in progress. Our bodies will tell us to slow up one day. In the meantime, we're in great shape and good health.
And didn't you tell me at some point that you wanted to go back to do the Amazon again or something?
Yeah.
Isn't that on your list
as well?
Yeah,
we went back a second time. Yeah. We've done 2,200 miles of kayaking there, and that's a fascinating place. The heat is something else. The bugs are something else. You come out with a lot of bites, and you lose a certain amount chunks of flesh every now and again to some of these little creatures. But it's a very interesting place.
So it doesn't seem to bother you whether you're in the ice cube cold or the desert, 125 degree heat.
Well, you can die very fast in both climates. We've decided. People say, "Well, which would you rather have?" We figured out in the end, I think we figured out that you could actually die faster from the heat than the cold. As long as you've got enough food and you can get your clothing and you get your tent up, you probably will survive the extreme, even minus 75 degrees, which we've experienced in the Arctic.
Wow.
But in the heat, it can just suck the moisture out of you. If you're just a few hours without water,
you're done.
You can be in deep, deep trouble. It can be a very fast, if things go wrong, you're in deep trouble either place. It's basically a mindset. If you go into the heat thinking, "Oh, how terribly hot this is," you'll be uncomfortable. But if you go in the cold and think, "It's too cold here," it will be too cold. You sort of have to go with the flow.
Yeah, no, I think, Kathy, I'm just seeing this question on the screen here, and I don't know... you said, okay, forget it. I was going to say, she was saying, do you prepare physically for these treks? But that must have been before we talked about, because you obviously do prepare. I mean, you're always taking your sleds and dragging stuff all over the planet. And
we practically live in the Cascades with hiking and...
Well, yeah, and a little skip and a jump for you is a five-mile, that's like nothing.
And we live just practically...
You go out for 20, 25 miles at a time.
We live very close to the Pacific Crest Trail, so we can get up onto the high trails and head north to Canada. It's a wonderful training ground. Plus, it's where we like to be.
And you say you do have a gym in your home, so you can work out there if you're not.
And we have steep hills on our 12.
Well, yeah, you're up and down.
We can run up and down those to our heart's content.
It's like, you know, who chooses to run up and down mountains? Helen and Bill do. My word. All right, well, three books. First one, Polar Dream. And if you haven't read this one, you've got to. And like I said, and all three are available on your website, right? So that's
right.
HelenThayer.com. And you do autograph books to send, don't you?
Yes, I can send an autograph copy.
Yeah, that one you can't put down and you'll read over and over again. The third book is the 1,600-mile trek across... A Desert of Hope and Despair, and that's Walking the Gobi.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when Tom and Jerry rolled on the water and Helen had to pull the elder card to not be shot.
Yeah.
it's a great story, too. And then I'm not sure which one is my favorite, but I absolutely adored. This is the second book. This is where we're going to spend our time. It's called Three Among the Wolves. A couple and their dog live a year with wolves in the wild. And I got to tell you, folks, this is another book that I couldn't put down. And when I had to, I couldn't wait to get back to it. And I just got to tell you that when at the end of the book, I just sat there and cried like a baby for two reasons. One, because of the end of the story,
mm-hmm.
and them having to leave the wolves. That got me. I'm crying because of that. But the other reason, the big cry came because I was so sad that it was over. That it was, I wanted it to go on and on. It is such a remarkable story. So obviously your desire and your plan to be three among the wolves, this involves you and Bill
and
of course, Charlie. What, because he... What did you say? His father was an Arctic wolf?
His grandfather was an Arctic wolf. And so Charlie had wolf genes in him. He was a big, big, fluffy, beloved, bonded family member of ours. But he was raised with Arctic wolves. After my expedition was over and I returned to base camp, he went out onto the ice. And I saw him actually playing with juvenile wolves.
Ah.
And so he was used to that. And we knew, Bill and I had wanted to study wolves for years, but there was no way we could ever figure out how to do it. But then when Charlie came along, we thought it just might work. Charlie's wolf heritage, it might allow him to be the link between us and the wolves.
The liaison to you and the wolves.
And it actually worked, but we didn't, it was an experiment.
Okay.
We didn't really know until it actually happened that it would work.
All right, so we're going to kind of leave you hanging there, folks, because we are going to take a little time out here and take care of our advertisers and sponsors, because after all, it is the most important part of the show. Without them, there's no us. And so I want you to pay attention and support them, thank them, all that good stuff. We'll come back and take care of current events, get that out of the way, and then we are going to become Three Among the Wolves, and we're going to hear the whole story. So stay with us. Animal World continues right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. Hey, since 1978, Puget Sound area animal owners have been able to depend on Jones & Company Pets for all of their animal care needs. At Jones & Company, their spacious store allows room for everything you need for your animal companions. You can find foods, accessories, fish supplies, supplements, cleaning products, and a whole lot more. The store within a store concept makes it easy to find the right products for your dog, cat, fish, bird, or exotic animal friend. And Jones & Company rigorously trains their staff so they can easily answer all of your questions. Visit Jones & Company. You'll find them on State Street in Marysville. You can give them a call at 360-658-7817. At Jones & Company Pets, their goal is happy, satisfied customers enjoying happy and healthy pets.
Massage is good for everyone, including your pets. Check out the Northwest School of Animal Massage's exciting new Vashon Island location. The Northwest School of Animal Massage offers a full schedule of classes, including T-Touch, flower essences, aromatherapy, and manual ligament therapy, plus massage for canines and small and large animal certification. Visit online at nwsam.com for registration details and to enroll online. For more information, call 877-836-3703. Locally, call 206-463-1425. That's 206-463-1425. Or check them out on Facebook.
This is Martha Norwalk, host of Animal World, and I'd like to talk to you about Robin Alexis. Although I liked Robin right away, I was skeptical at first. But let me tell you, that was unwarranted, and now I believe that Robin is the real deal. Often referred to as the metaphysical mother, Robin's a spiritual empowerment coach with incredible gifts. Robin's a medium, ghost and baby whisperer, medical intuitive, past life reader, animal communicator, and channel. In addition to being a radio and TV personality and author, she's also a Reiki master teacher. Simply put, Robin is amazing. I know because she's been helping me incredibly on many levels. Robin is nurturing, powerful, and did I say phenomenally gifted? Robin can help you too. Her books and personal one-on-one phone readings can change your life forever. Let Robin help you heal and release those blockages so you can experience life more fully. To schedule a reading, go to robinalexis.com, and while you're there, download a free copy of the first two chapters of her new book. That's robinalexis.com, or give her a call at 360-457-2993. That's 360-457-2993.
Does your dog experience bad breath or gas? Does your cat spit up hairballs? Try Optigest. Optigest is a natural formula of digestive enzymes and the prebiotic FOS. Even pets with a healthy diet can experience digestive upset due to diet change, separation, or the normal aging process. Optigest works fast and has no inactive ingredients. Optigest supports intestinal balance and a healthy immune system to promote more comfortable, active, and vibrant dogs and cats. Ask for Optigest at your natural pet store today.
Hi, this is Martha. Did you know that besides hosting Animal World, I'm also an animal behavior therapist and trainer with more than 40 years of professional experience? I work with you privately in your home or over the phone to help you understand your animal friends and resolve whatever behavior training or healing problems you've got going on. Most of my expertise is with cats and dogs, but I sometimes work with other types of animals as well. So whether it's puppies or kittens, adult dogs or cats, or elderly animal issues, I can help. Cats not using the litter box? Biting or scratching you or your furniture? Maybe they're fighting with each other or waking you up at night. I've got answers. Dogs barking too much, jumping or dragging you around the block on your walk? Does he have separation anxiety or chew up stuff he shouldn't? I've got answers. Whatever's going on with your animal friends, I will help you fix it. I am more than reasonably priced and often need to see you only once. I always do a free, no-obligation telephone evaluation, so give me a call and bug my voicemail if you need immediate attention. You'll find me at Martha's Canine, Feline, and All Creature Counseling at 360-217-7258. That's 360-217-7258, and I'd love to hear from you.
Get a grip on life with Alternative Talk 1150.
Hey, y'all, Martha Norwalk, and thank you for spending your Sunday morning with us here on Animal World. We're having a wonderful time with adventure travelers Helen and Bill Thayer. You can have the same adventure and have Helen come to your school, talk to your kids, come to your home, come to your business, and do a program. It's absolutely phenomenal. We're going to get back to that, but right now it's time for current events. Love those jingle cats. Okay, and in the entertainment department, tickets are now available for the 15th annual Black Cat Ball. That benefits Perfect Pals in Arlington. It's October 27th this year at the Meydenbauer Center in Bellevue. They'll have over 500 silent and live auction items. And champagne reception and gourmet vegetarian or vegan dinner with wine. Halloween costumes are optional, and you can call Perfect Pals at 360-652-9611, extension 15, or www.perfectpals.org. This reminds me, when we get done with current events, when we were off the air, Mike was asking Helen and Bill about where to go in Africa and if you could only go once and that sort of thing. And what reminded me is that at these Mike, these auctions, like at Perfect Pals, this kind of place, they're always auctioning off. It's almost at every one of them. They have these African trips. And they say they're like, you know, $4,000 value or something. But they go for often very reasonable at these animal benefits. I know Tuxes and Tails usually has them. I mean, it was auctioned off again at Homeward, a pet auction, probably at Perfect Pals. And so I want to come back after current events to find out if anybody knows, are these really, I've heard that people say it's a really good deal, but I don't know if it goes to the same area you were talking about, so we'll come back with that. Let's see. Also, Perfect Pals is having a vintage cat adoption special. So now through July 31st, they have a reduced adoption fee of $50 for cats 7 years or older. Bonded pairs are available for $75 instead of $150. So check them out at Purrfect, that's P-U-R-R, PurrfectPals.org. Remember, today is the last day for $50 kittens at the Humane Society in Bellevue. Adopt one kitten for $50 or two for $90, normally $125 and $200. And they're open from 11 a.m. They'll open the doors in 5 minutes till 6 p.m. today. And this is new on the current events list. Registration is now open for the Walk for the Animals to benefit Seattle Humane Society at the U-Village Fido Fest on October 23rd. So if you register before August 20th, you get the early bird special. So that's at www.seattlehumane.org/walk. And then today is the last day of the Evergreen Cat Fanciers Show Cats Helping Street Cats. It's a 12-ring championship and household pet cat show. It's today at the Hilton Bellevue until 5 p.m. today. Now, another new item, benefit barbecue and auction for the Macaw Rescue and Sanctuary in Carnation. And I understand they're really hurting and need help because I think they've had problems with wildlife breaking in, and going after their birds. And they need to be able to reinforce their sanctuary and containment for the parrots and macaws. If you can help out with this benefit barbecue and auction, it's August 25th. It'll be at 1 p.m. It's $20 in advance, $25 the day of, $10 for children. And you can get tickets at Brown Paper Tickets or email macawsanctuary@gmail.com. Posado's Bark at Marymore Park is Sunday, August 19th from 11 to 5 p.m. And the walk starts at noon. And then Meow's annual fundraiser, Fine Wines and Felines, is August 25th, meowcatrescue.org. And then remember the All Breed Equine Rescue Benefit Golf Tournament coming up. I think it's next weekend. That's July 28th, 8:30 a.m. at Glen Eagle Golf Course in Arlington. If you need more information, 425-263-6390. Or allbreedrez.com. All right, and that covers the current events. If you want more details, links, and other items that I didn't mention, go to marthanorwalk.com and click on current events. That will bring up everything. And then I'll just remind you that my gosh, time is flying. Next Sunday is the last Sunday of July already. Holy moly. And that means it's Shelter Rescue Sanctuary and anything that helps our animal friends Sunday. We'll, talk with Mollywood as usual. I'll breed equine rescue. We'll find out about the golf tournament because I think it will be the day before. It's next Saturday is their golf tournament. And so we'll get a follow-up on that. We will talk to some of these other rescues and sanctuaries about their fundraisers coming up next month. And we've got a special deal. There's a special deal going on. One of our Animal World listeners has a new creation on Facebook to help the animals. And I think it's even a site she's putting together. So if there's something going on with your animal friends, you can get into the Facebook page and ask people to send prayers and energy and Reiki and help and all of that and some other things. So anyway, Christine is her name, and she's just an incredible animal lover that's doing something wonderful for the animals, and she's going to join us on the phone next week to tell us all about it. So if you want an easy way through Facebook to help animals, tune in next week because we're going to find out all about it. So that kind of covers all those bases. Now, before we're out of time here, Mike, you were asking Helen, what did you say if you could go to Africa once, where to go?
Yeah, Africa's on my list, and it's a lot like, in many ways, Alaska. I mean, if you can only go once, you got to make some choices because you can't see it all in one trip. It's just not physically or economically viable. So the question was, is if I could go to one place, what would you suggest? What area, what country, what park, reserve, or desert would be the most bang for the emotional and psychological buck?
Well, we would choose Tanzania, Serengeti. You'd fly into Arusha, the tourist capital, so to speak, and you can get, you know, Bill and I, when we go, we don't have guides because we go to the back country to live with the tribes. But as a tourist, you could go in there, you get a guide, or you could even arrange with an American company here before you go. But you could go by the Ngorongoro crater to see it, but the biggest place, the best place, is the Serengeti. And if you and you can get up close to the animals there, the guides will take you in safari vehicles. We were fortunate because we were with the tribes, and so we would be out with Maasai warriors, and so we were able to get up very close. But as a tourist in these safari vehicles, they get the people very close, and it's very expensive. It's one of the most expensive places in the world you can go to. They expect huge tips, huge fees, but if you can go there and look at those animals, they're just extraordinary.
And of course, you need a visa and any special
immunization. You do need a visa. They're not hard to get. A visa and
are immunizations needed?
And you
needed?
Need to check up on your immunizations. Get those in place. But a tourist company will advise you on those sorts of things. They'll even get your visa for you.
Okay.
You can get the visa at the airport if you want to, but if you want to be sure of things, get it before you leave. travel light so you don't have a lot of luggage.
And take a camera, Bill says.
Take a good camera with a telephoto lens.
That makes sense.
But there are a lot of people who are not, like, we're photographers, so we have camera gear, but people go with their point and shoots and they see the animals and so forth. And of course, at different times of the year, you don't want to go in April and May. It's the wet season. The dry season is June, July, August, September. It's very dry.
Any language preparation necessary?
No, the guides will speak English. Okay. But you might go, too, during the migration, the great wildebeest migration. This could be in end of October, November, and then you can get them on the return journey in January, February. October, November, or January, February, those would be the months if you want to see that. It's just thousands and thousands of a great sea of wildebeest animals.
I'm sold.
Okay. Now, before we close out this hour and get going on the next hour, I just want to say, if any of you out there know what I'm talking about when I talk about these benefit dinner auctions for the animal rescues, it's been for years, they've all been auctioning off African safaris. Since Helen said Tanzania is the place to go and all of this, does anybody know, are these African safaris, are they Tanzania? Is that what these things are? If there's anybody listening, because I know they're always at Tuxes and Tails. They were at Homeward Pet. I'm assuming they're probably going to be at Perfect Pals because they seem to be at all the animal benefit
auctions.
People
can also go to, they can get good safaris in Nepal, Kenya as well.
So I just like to know if there's anybody out there listening. I know I've asked people that have gone that said they were fabulous, but does anybody know where they go? And so if you can't call us or email animalworldlive@hotmail.com or call Ajie or Kathy 425-373-5527. And then just I've got a note also, apparently one of our local Mud Bay Granary stores is having adoptions today only. And he's supposed to be emailing us with information. So as soon as I have that and the start off the next day, I'll tell you where that is, because apparently they've got some good adoptions going on today only. So we'll let you know about that. We're going to close this out. I think we will go ahead and run the flea tip just because I'm realizing it's been several weeks. We've been doing the hot weather stuff. We haven't run the flea stuff, and fleas are a problem right now. And I don't want you to use the chemicals unless you absolutely have to. So listen up for Martha's four-step flea plan, and then we're going to the wolves with Helen and Bill as we continue. So stay with us right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
The preceding hour of Martha Norwalk's Animal World was brought to you by Jones & Company Pets. Their goal is happy, satisfied customers enjoying happy, healthy pets.